Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us for the first half of the show today is Sarah Galbraith, a postdoctoral student with the OSU School of Forestry. And she's here to talk about her study, which was published last week, which demonstrates that wildfire severity is a strong predictor of bee diversity in forests. So Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start with this. Why is this topic important, and why focus on bees in the wake of wildfires?
Yeah, well, this topic is important for a couple of reasons. So first of all, bees are a really critical part of our ecosystems. And we specifically were studying native bees, which are bees that are not managed by humans. So these bees, along with some of our managed bees as well, support the biodiversity of flowering plants, because about 90% of plants worldwide need some kind of animal pollinator to help them reproduce, and bees play a big role in that. And here in Oregon, where we did our study, a lot of crops like clover and blueberries that are really economically important are also supported both by managed bees and by native bees. And as our managed bees are experiencing some population loss, and we're finding threats to both managed and native bee communities, it's really important that we understand how changes in habitat could affect our native bees. And there's really not a lot of research on how forest disturbances like wildfire could affect wild bees. And as, you know, many people are aware, out west, there's increasing wildfire activity. So this is a really critical question in order to understand how wild bee populations could be impacted in the future.
And I saw that you had said, you know, in the past, this has been studied a little bit, but the researchers were only looking at presence or absence of forest fire. Was there fire or was there not any fire? And what did the bee populations look like? But you and your team kind of took it to the next level and started looking at, like, well, how severe are the wildfires that have, you know, taken place here, and how have those impacted the bees? So tell us a little bit about what you found there.
Yeah, so a lot of times in many regions, including southwestern Oregon, where we did the study, many of the fires are mixed severity. So when you go back to a forest after it's burned, you can really easily see patches that burn more severely than others. And a few years after the fire, the habitats that follow these different severities of burn are really distinct. So we wanted to understand whether the severity of the fire influenced the habitat available for our native bees. So 3 to 4 years after this Douglas Complex fire, we looked at how the fire severity impacted wild bees by basically creating this map of fire severity with collaborators, and looking at the map and then selecting areas that burned at low severity all the way up to the most severely burned forest, and sampling both wild bees and also habitat characteristics within those patches. And so what was really interesting was that we found that in areas that burned more severely, so areas where we saw more change in the forest due to the fire, that's where we found the most bees.
So give us a sense of those habitat characteristics, like a low severity fire. What would that forest look like versus, you know, mm-hmm. a high severity fire?
Well, severity can be measured in a lot of different ways. And for this study, we looked at the change in basal area due to the fire. So basically, how much damage was done to the trees that were in that forested region. And to kind of give you an idea of how it looks, when you go to a low severity burn, again, it's going to depend a little bit on the fire. But in this case, we saw some charring on the trees, but this was 3 to 4 years after the fire had occurred. So other than some of those blackened areas, there weren't a lot of signs of fire. And then in the severely burned areas, we were looking at places where tree mortality was very high, and a lot of that vegetation had been removed. So we were seeing some dead stumps or dead trees that remained. But other than that, a lot of the vegetation had been removed from the fire. So we're really comparing what still looks like mostly an intact forest to to an area that has been completely opened up.
Ah, that's what I was going to mention, opened up versus less open. A low severity fire still has a canopy associated to it, whereas a high severity fire, maybe not so much.
Yeah, and, you know, there is kind of a whole other division of science that looks at severity of burn and different ways that a forest can burn. But in this case, we really saw a distinction between low severity fire being an area where we did not see canopy removal versus the more severe fire where the canopy had opened up. And so we saw much more flowering plants coming back and being able to bloom in the understory because of all that increased light getting to the forest floor.
So you said you saw more bee, I think, abundance and diversity in these areas where you had a severe burn. So tell us kind of more specifically about what you were finding.
Yeah, so we looked at abundance of bees. So we used traps and we looked at how many bees we were collecting per trap and counted the number of native bees that we were seeing. And then we also counted the number of different species. And what we found was that we got about 20 times more bees in the most severely burned versus the least severely burned forest patches. And then we also saw an increase in the richness, species richness of the bees as well. And we collected about 11 times more bee species in those areas that were severely burned. So as we collected more bees, we were also collecting more species. And seeing that trend is important because it's not just one or two species that seem to be benefiting. It seemed to be a lot of different species that were visiting these severely burned patches, most likely because of all these flowers that were now blooming in the understory.
Okay, so the flowers appear, but of course their proliferation is a function of pollinators. And that's that they attract the bees under high severity conditions, right? So
yeah, there is.
Okay, and but are these bumblebees or what type of bees are they? Honeybees versus more singular bumblebees?
Well, we collected about 100 species of bees in this study, so we're talking about bumblebees, sweat bees, all different types of bees. We did not necessarily include honeybees in a lot of this analysis because honeybees are managed. So if we're trying to figure out, you know, where honeybees are, that's usually determined by where a beekeeper is keeping the colony. But what we looked at was native bees that might be nesting in the ground or sometimes a tree cavity. And again, we collected about 100 species, which is really exciting because in Oregon, right now, we have estimates of about 500 species in the state. So what this shows is that this disturbed forest area is supporting, you know, a large number of species.
So you mentioned the flowers, you know, coming in being a predictor or an important part of the habitat for the bees, and then also kind of like nesting opportunity. So talk a little bit about, you know, how native bees nest and their life cycle, because I think many of us think of honeybees in these, you know, huge hives. What does it look like for a native bee?
Right. So again, native bees are really diverse. So one of the challenges of studying bees, when we look at these big population studies, is that they all have very different nesting habits and they might be active at different times of the year. So we want to look at a whole and say, how diverse is this community? So in this study, we measured a couple of different types of potential nesting substrates. And one of the really big ones that we need to look at is exposed bare ground, because actually the majority of native species, they nest underground. So they'll make a little tunnel in the ground and then lay their eggs in that tunnel. And not only are most bees ground nesting, but also most native bee species are also solitary. So they don't live in a hive or a colony like we think of honeybees and even bumblebees, which are also, bumblebees are native bees, but they are social. Most bees, the female will lay her egg and provide it with nectar and pollen and only care for its own offspring. So kind of an interesting thing that factors into this. So we measured how much bare ground was available in the areas of the forest that we were working in. And then we also measured the amount of dead wood. So we looked at how many logs and snags remained after the fire. And then we also counted beetle holes, because the exit holes of wood-burrowing beetles can also be used by some bees. So what was really interesting was that not only did we find that there was more flowering plants in the severely burned forest, but we also saw that a lot of the nesting substrates were still there after the fire. So, you know, there were definitely a lot of dead trees that were in those severely burned areas. And then also the fire had created patches of bare ground as well. So both nesting habitat as well as flowers remained in these severely burned patches. And we think that's the habitat that was supporting the bee communities that we found there.
So if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Sarah Galbraith, a postdoctoral researcher with the Oregon State University School of Forestry, talking about her paper published just last week about wildfire severity and the impacts on native bee populations.
So what does, going forward, if this is a means of these pollinator species are a means of providing revegetating severely burned areas, does it mean anything for kind of, besides plants, trees and other type of and maybe even other insects? Is it a way of repopulating the forest writ large?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, insects are an incredibly diverse group, and a lot of them are going to benefit from a less disturbed forest, and some, like pollinators, are going to benefit from a more disturbed forest. So what's interesting is that we're still learning a lot about how disturbances affect the organisms in a forest. And I think this is additional evidence that we really need these sort of mosaic of habitats. And so disturbances do play an important role in the forest. And some species are also going to depend on a less disturbed forest. So usually what we find is the most diverse landscape and supports the most organisms is one where there are some natural disturbances, but there's also areas that are sort of reserves or protected as well. And that usually supports the most diversity overall. It's the sort of mosaic.
Mm. So tell us how these findings could be used for our management of lands, not just with wildfires, but maybe with, you know, logging, timber harvesting, controlled burns, things like that.
Well, as far as bees go, we're really still trying to build a baseline understanding of how forest management as well as natural disturbances affect bees. And that's one of the roles that we play in our lab, where we're working right now in a study where we're studying how just the time since harvest, how those pollinator populations change in the years that follow a clear cut. So, we still have a lot to learn about that. And I think what's important is that a lot of land managers are interested in these questions and are becoming more aware of the importance of pollinators. I don't necessarily have the recommendations, but I do think it's really important to collect this data and understand how, you know, activities in the forest might be affecting our pollinators, since about half of Oregon is forested. So it's really critical that if there's things we can be doing to better support pollinators, these might be important refuges that will help support pollinators in the future for both wild plants and also supporting our agriculture.
This question kind of circles back maybe to the very beginning. Is there any evidence that these bees kind of flee the fire? Or are they consumed by the fire? And is it the edge bees, the survivors that repopulate? Or do you see, I know that's a difficult one. You'd have to tag them or something like that.
Right,
see
little
bands of bees.
Of evidence of burn scars on them or something. But is there anything like that? Do they have a sense of a fight or flight type of sense to
them?
Yeah,
we're starting to get a better idea of that. And one of our co-authors, Jim Payne, has other studies out where he's actually looked at how far in the ground the bees have to nest in order for their offspring to survive a wildfire.
Oh, okay.
So in the case of bees that nest underground, we actually find that a lot of times the eggs that they lay underground can survive, and then the next year those bees can actually emerge. So some bees can definitely survive a wildfire. And it's likely that other bees that maybe they're bees that nest in trees and the tree is burned and so their nest does not survive, it's very likely that they could be moving in from areas along the edge of the habitat. So I think it's a combination of recolonization and survival. And I think that because we did our study 3 to 4 years after the fire, we're looking at a time where there's been able to be some changes since that fire happened. And probably if we looked the first year after the fire, we might find some distinct patterns or distinct bee communities there.
So I did a quick search for Utah native bees, and I found that from the, and this is odd, from the Utah State University website, utahpest.usu.e. First of all, change your name, please, because if you're talking about bees, they're not pests. But yeah. Utah is home to about 900 native bee species. That's amazing. And you say Oregon has 500. These are numbers that just are astounding when you think about, well, that we see maybe a dozen different types of bees.
It's really incredible. And actually, worldwide, there's about 20,000 species of bees, and in fact, they outnumber all species of mammals and birds combined.
Oh, wow.
So we're really looking at a very diverse group, and, you know, what's really incredible is that, you know, bees have such different nesting habitats, such different flowers that they visit, that it's really fascinating, and we still have a ton to learn about this group.
And again, these are mostly bumblebees or other types, not the domesticated honeybees. Or are there wild types of honeybees in Oregon?
Well, not in Oregon. So honeybees, Apis mellifera, is the species of bee that we use to make honey and that they ship around to pollinate a lot of crops.
Yeah.
And that's actually a European honeybee. So it's a species that we brought here hundreds of years ago and have been managing in the U.S. and in many places of the world. So there are places of the world where honeybees are native, but in the U.S., we do not have native honeybees.
Okay. Well, one last question, wrap up. What's next as far as what you're going to be observing?
Yeah, well, I mentioned before, we do have this study that we're working on where we're looking more at land management and how that affects pollinators. So that's a big question, and I think it's going to be really interesting. So we're in the second year of that study right now, and we're doing that in the Coast Range of Oregon, where a lot of our timber is produced. And there's other people at Oregon State University and other people we've collaborated with that are also looking at things like what happens, how do managed forests versus unmanaged forests, how does severe burn and recovery differ in those different areas. So really looking, I think, at the nexus of land management and wildfire is going to be one of the big questions that we need to address as well.
Well, we'll stay tuned, and we'll certainly be looking to talk with you about this again in the future. That's Sarah Galbraith with Oregon State University School of Forestry. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks.